broadcasting from Cincinnati.
You're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news from the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Podcast, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we'll talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorta, and I'm here with my co-host, Ringside Robert, and we have a great show for you today. And as always, you can catch us on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com. And today, we're going to talk about Walters and Lomachenko. Are they ready to fight? Not just yet. Nicholas the Axeman looking for some more money, and we'll talk about that. Manny Pacquiao banned from the Grove in L.A. No more Cheesecake Factory for you. Our history lesson this week goes deep. Robbie, deep! March 21st, 1997, Roy Jones Jr. versus Montel Griffin. But first, we start off with the fight this weekend. The fight, the main fight. Roy Jones Jr. gets to fight a fan. The fan was Viron Phillips. Viron Phillips was chosen as the fan to fight Roy Jones Jr. Now, Viron Phillips is an MMA fighter with a record of 5-3. He took the fight, he took the fight to Roy Jones in the first round. He was coming forward, doing all the punching. Roy didn't do much of anything in the first round but move. But you could tell he was very relaxed. And you also got the feeling that he could take out Phillips at any point, he wanted. It was one of those kind of things. You could just see it in Roy Jones where he was just kind of toying with the guy. It wasn't even like, he wasn't really taking it too serious. It looked like a sparring session for him. It really did. Phillips, I thought, did very well in the first round. In fact, I gave him the round. But at the end, he was caught with a big right hand that set him reeling back a few steps along the ropes. If the ropes weren't there, he would have definitely went down. Luckily, the ref didn't call the eight count. That being said, I still gave him the round. He was more aggressive. He was doing most of the punching. He threw more punches. Honestly, he probably landed more punches. I gave him the first round. The second round started, and Roy Jones started to open up a little bit more. You could see Phillips at this point start to hesitate because he had tasted the power of Jones the round before. Toward the end of the round, Roy landed a monster left hook to the body. This shot was brutal, and you could tell it hurt him. It was definitely a heavy shot, man. I mean, just a thud. Phillips came forward with a shot, and Roy countered with a left-right combination. The left missed, but the right caught him right on the button as he was coming in. Phillips fell face first and was able to make the count, but he was out on his feet. The referee stepped in and stopped the fight around the 2:30 mark of the second round.
Well, I got two questions here. Did you enjoy spending the $12 for the fight? Because it was pay-per-view. I found that out through Jim Ross because he broadcasted it. He said it was pay-per-view on his podcast last week.
Yeah.
Is this the last we ever see of Roy Jones in a boxing ring, or is he going to be delusional and continue fighting?
I don't know. First of all, the pay-per-view, I heard the pay-per-view was okay. I got all the results and everything like that, but the thing is, I watched it on YouTube.
Next day
on YouTube. Yeah, I was okay. Okay to wait for it. On Facebook and YouTube the next day, so I was just we'll wait for it. I don't want to see it that, that bad. It was okay. It was, to pay for that fight, they had other people on the card. I mean, so they had like Chael Sonnen and Michael Bisping. They were in like a jiu-jitsu match.
Yeah, they had a wrestling match.
Mysterio, incidentally, if you didn't see the card, Chael Sonnen and Michael Bisping went to a draw. Nobody won. I think Chael got a takedown, but it was submission only. It was under Matamoros rules, so it was submission only. Nobody won the fight. Rey Mysterio apparently pinned Kurt Angle with some outside interference. And there were two MMA guys that I hadn't heard of, but apparently it was a pretty wild fight. So, but whatever.
Well, and Jim Ross was broadcasting the fight, so he made sure to plug it on his podcast. So,
right. It was, so if you pay $12, I imagine you probably got $12 worth. I don't know.
Yeah.
The only thing I was interested really on there was the fight with Roy Jones and Phillips. You know, and now as far as Roy Jones fighting again, he said, I mean, he admittedly said at the end of the interview, he said that he's at the end of his boxing career.
Well, thank God.
Right, you know, so whether he does or doesn't, I don't know. He said basically if the fans like this, you know, he said he may be open to it again. He didn't, because they asked him, would you do this again, fight like a fan type thing. And he didn't seem real open to it. He said, you know, I imagine if they throw a boatload of money at him, and he would do it again.
Of course. If anybody wants a suitcase full of money, just call Don King.
Yeah, right, you know. But I think that, I mean, you know, he gave a lot of props to Phillips at the end of the fight for having the courage to step in there and stuff. And he's right. I mean, Phillips deserves a lot of credit for stepping in there. He was outclassed, no question. I mean, Roy Jones, just one of the best fighters ever, you know, lace him up.
Yeah, of course. Now, that's why it's a Roy Jones podcast this week.
So, yeah, right. I mean, exactly. You know, I mean, he's one of the best ones to ever lace him up. So, you know, for Phillips to get in there and you know, he's got to know in his heart that he didn't have a shot to win this. I mean,
right.
I know he goes in there to win, and he goes in there and thinking, you know, if I clip this guy or, you know, but deep down, after that first round, when he got stung after that first round, he knew, I think he really knew there was nothing he could do against Roy. And even during the fight, I think he started to, you know, you can kind of get that sense that he, you know, you kind of know what your poison's going to be here.
Uh-huh.
You're not going to get this guy. The only chance you have is to try to win it on points. You're not going to catch this guy.
Well, I'll never forget it. Every time somebody fought Joe Calzaghe, before the fight, they always said, oh, it's going to be easy. He doesn't look that complicated, what have you. And then after the fight, it's like, I didn't realize what I was in for. The classic case of that was Jeff Lacy.
Yeah.
I mean, Lacy talked a whole lot of smack. Oh, I can go to the UK, and I beating him is going to be no problem. After the fight, Jeff Lacy was never the same.
I mean, right, that's the thing. I mean, I think that, you know, you look at Roy and you look at his past performances, and I think you could say, from couch to ring, you could say, oh, man, he's way past his prime, you know, and I could get in there. I could probably tag him. I really could. I think if I got in that ring, you know, he could throw. Maybe he's still got some speed. Maybe he's still got a little pop. But you know what? I could probably take his pop. I could probably tag him. I know I've got the power to put him out.
Right.
You have no idea. You have no idea what you're talking about. You have
absolutely
no clue.
A reality hits you as soon as you step in the ring. It's like, oh, what did I get myself in for?
You know? And Phillips, you know, I mean, he may be a fan of Roy Jones. I don't know who's not a fan of Roy Jones, but I mean, he may be a fan of Roy Jones. But they got Phillips in there because, you know, they couldn't have a regular fan.
No, because Arizona said we're not going to allow it, you know.
Right. The commission said, hey, go take this somewhere else, you know.
Yeah,
and
right.
So they got a legitimate guy in there, you know, who's an MMA guy or whatever, and he's, like I said, he's 5-3 in MMA. And, the difference was clear going into this, man. When I watched Phillips box in the first round, even though he was having a good round, you know, he was having a good round, not a real good round, but I thought he did enough to win. I mean, I gave him the round. You know, like I said, he was aggressive and stuff. But when you watch his style, he kept his chin up, you know, when he's fighting. He's like more of a stand-up, almost like a karate-type style.
Right.
And the way he held his hands at times, he almost had like both hands up, almost like a Thai fighter would. You know, when you do the Muay Thai and stuff, how they do the how they come in with both gloves up like that. That's kind of how he reminded me at times. At times I saw him do the shell. At times I saw him, you know, look like a boxer. But for the most part, the thing that really got me is that his chin was way up in the air. And he was just waiting. I mean, especially you can't do that against somebody like Jones who's seen everything. You know, you're looking at, you know, an Olympian here, an Olympian world-class fighter, and he left his chin exposed. And I saw this in the first round. I thought, that's going to be bad. That's just going to be bad.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, his style makes sense because he's from the MMA world.
Right.
You know, so he's got to worry about takedowns and kicks and everything like that. So that style made sense there. It didn't make a lot of sense here.
Right.
You know, so that was the tough part. Honestly, man, I would have loved to see Nick Diaz in there against Roy Jones Jr. That would have been a good fight because he can box. He's a very good boxer. And,
right.
You know, so
well, apparently Diaz didn't volunteer. Phillips did, so
I think Diaz. Diaz wasn't the type they were looking for.
right.
They didn't want a live dog in there, you know.
Well, hey, good for Roy, and I hope this is it. Roy knows more about boxing than most of us will ever remember. And he's been good for the sport, but his in-ring activity, it's over with. He can, you know, he can be a good trainer. He can be a good analyst on TV. You know, there's other things he can do, but it's time to hang up the gloves, man. While you still have a brain left.
Well, and I think he knows that. I think he, you know, kind of realizes that. And, you know, with something like this, what could Roy Jones possibly gain from this aside from money? You know what I mean? What else could he possibly gain from this?
Yeah.
There's nothing to gain from this,
from
beating up this guy. You know, and I'll tell you what, all the credit to Viron Phillips. I mean, all the credit in the world to this guy, because this guy got in there with, like I said, the best ever, one of the best ever, and held his own. I mean, he really held his own for the first round. Second round, he got a little banged up, you know, but, hey, you know, that's to be expected.
Yeah, right.
That's what we all expected, and that's what everybody got, you know. But you know,
yeah, we all didn't forget.
right. You know, but hats off to Phillips, man. He was a warrior in there, man, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Good for him. And Roy, please go do other things. Good career. Nothing to worry about. You've accomplished a lot. But let's hang up the gloves and do what Roy Jones knows how to do: promote, announce, train, whatever.
And I don't know who the announcers were on. I know Jim Ross was one of them.
Right.
But I think James Toney was the other. I don't know for a fact, though. I don't know who the other. It sounded a lot like James Toney, but who knows, you know.
Yeah, well, Jim didn't say who he was going to be working with, so I can't help you there.
Right.
You know.
But they were, I mean, the fight was announced pretty good. I thought it was pretty good overall, so for as long as it lasted anyway.
Right.
All right. So some other fights this weekend. Mike Alvarado won his comeback fight against Saul Corral. It looked like he got banged up in the process. And then Juan Diaz knocked out Fernando Garcia as well on his comeback trail. I don't really have any real coverage of these fights other than the results, quite honestly. I really wasn't interested in them. I just wasn't.
Hey,
they were nothing. Let me tell you something. They were nothing more than setup fights. And not unlike the Jones fight we covered, which was a setup. I mean, you know, they're... Roy Jones expected a win, clearly. But the Jones fight was at least entertaining.
Yeah, well, frankly, you know, I'm not interested in Mile High Mike either. But unfortunately for Juan Diaz, rumor has it, if he won, which he did, he would be the next opponent June 11th for one Felix Verdejo, provided Felix Verdejo wins his tune-up fight in April on the island.
Right. Yeah, we'll see. You know, we'll see.
You know,
we'll see what happens. I mean, I don't know. That's a tough fight for Diaz, but any step up in class for Diaz at this point is going to be a tough fight for him.
So. Yeah, well, that's why Top Rank has booked the big room in the Garden for June 11th, because they wanted to put Verdejo in the big room, and then they wanted to have Walters and Lomachenko to open up the show, and we'll talk about that later.
Okay. So let's go to our upcoming fights here.
Okay.
March 25th at Miami, Oklahoma, on Showtime. Yeah, right? There's a Miami, Oklahoma. How about that?
Yeah,
and also Cincinnati, Iowa, believe it or not.
Okay.
Regis Progrias versus Aaron Herrera, 10 rounds, junior.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's the guy from New Orleans. That's a showbox card, Eric.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Ivan Brancic versus Nick Givan, rounds, junior welterweights.
The featured guy is the guy from New Orleans there. He's well worth watching. Okay.
Now, which one is that? Is that
Regis?
Progrias, okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right, but I know.
I am either. Yeah.
I know who he is.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then on Robbie's favorite channel, Estrella TV, Antonio Orozco versus Miguel Acosta, 10 rounds, welterweights.
Okay.
And let's see here. Then we move on to the 26th, Oakland, California, on HBO. The big one this weekend, the marquee fight, Andre Ward versus Sullivan Barrera, 12 rounds, light heavyweights. Also, Joseph Diaz is on the card versus Jason Velez, 10 rounds, featherweights.
I think the Joseph Diaz fight is going to be better to watch than the Andre Ward fight. Joseph Diaz has got a bright future, and I'm going to be happy to tell you they're going to be fighting in a half-empty arena. At least tickets are not selling.
I'm hearing every time, and Robert, you know better than I do, but I'm hearing every time that Andre Ward goes there, he's selling at least 10,000. That's a good number for a fight.
Well,
it may be a bigger arena, but 10 grand is a good gate for a fight.
No, I mean, last time against Paul Smith, I think he got 9,000, which shocked the hell out of me. And, you know, because nobody knows who the hell Paul Smith is.
Right.
That was the fight on BET last June. If they get 10,000, you can call it a success. But that arena almost seats 20,000 people, and you know, so I'm worried about when the cameras go on, is the arena going to look half empty? You know,
I mean, that's a tall order. That's a tall order to sell 20 grand. I mean, even in your hometown, I mean, that's a tall order to stack it with that much.
Well, right now the ticket attraction in Oakland, California, is the world champion Golden State Warriors. I mean, if you want to sell out,
how are they doing against San Antonio? I didn't even see the score on that.
Well, right now they're 1-1. They beat San Antonio in Oakland in January, and they lost to San Antonio in San Antonio on Saturday.
And
they've got two more left, because they're the class of the NBA, and it's a shame that they're in the same conference.
Right.
Because what I think is going to happen is they're going to split their regular season meetings, and then they're going to have a playoff series, and it's going to go down to Game 7, and it's going to come down to whoever has home court advantage, whoever wins that series, because the winner of that series is probably going to win the NBA title, you know. But they played a good game on Saturday, but San Antonio won. And what I like about this is they're both undefeated at home. The Warriors are undefeated in Oakland, and San Antonio is undefeated in San Antonio. So,
wow.
And they both have long consecutive home winning streaks.
That's
so
crazy, yeah.
Yeah. When you turn on your TV Saturday night, it won't look like a Warriors game, that's for sure.
So what do you think about Andre Ward and Sullivan Barrera? I mean, how do you see this fight going?
Well, I applaud Ward for taking on somebody that really knows how to box and has a lot of movement. But I think if the real Andre Ward shows up, I think he finds a way to pull out a hometown decision. I'm worried about Andre Ward when his competition level steps up because, you know, he's only had like four fights in the last 4 years. And to me, you have to be more active than that, especially later on this year if you're planning on fighting people like Stevenson or Kovalev. I'm worried about his long-term success. I understand Andre Ward is a special talent, but inactivity, I think, is going to be the thing that catches up with him.
I think, first of all, I don't think the Stevenson fight with Ward would ever happen.
No, but you can always hope.
I would love for that fight to happen. Andre Ward would wipe that guy.
Well, believe me, I'm not impressed with Stevenson either.
No.
I would agree with you.
Now, Sullivan Barrera is a good fighter, very good fighter. He's just not on the level, man, that Andre Ward is.
No, he's not.
I'll be honest, man. I think this is a 10-2 fight, man.
Yeah.
I don't think Ward knocks him out, but I think it's completely one-sided. I don't think Sullivan has got that ring IQ. I don't think Sullivan is going to be able to do anything against Ward.
No, and I look at this as a Mayweather mismatch kind of thing, you know, where he's a chosen opponent for a reason, and Ward is going to show by his performance, okay, I'm back, I can handle anybody. I'm just worried about when the level of competition actually steps up, you know, that's when we're going to find out what Andre's got left.
Well, this is definitely a step up, yes?
Yeah.
I mean, would you agree with that? I mean, I think Sullivan is definitely a dangerous guy.
Yeah, it's a step up from a Paul Smith. And remember, this is his debut at light heavyweight, so, you know.
Yeah. And we'll see, you know, how his boxing ability – his boxing ability should not go anywhere, but his power, we'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
And see if he's able to – if he – what if he knocks out Sullivan Barrera?
Now, if he knocks out Sullivan Barrera, then the move up to light heavyweight is going to look more impressive, because then you're going to say, oh, wow, he brought power up with him. It might be – you know, it might be a more interesting fight later on this year when he fights the Crusher. Because remember, that's already signed, sealed, and delivered. That's scheduled for November.
Yeah, I think, like I said, man, I think, do you think this is an easy fight for Ward?
I think it's going to be difficult for the first few rounds, but what I like about Andre is he's one of these guys that once he figures out his opponent, he realizes what he has to do, and he goes to work on it. And he's got a good guy in the corner. So Virgil, don't underestimate Virgil Hunter in this situation either. So Sullivan Barrera is going to have a very interesting beginning, but I think when it comes to the end, I think you're going to see the difference in class if the real Andre Ward shows up.
When you say the real Andre Ward, I mean, have you seen him? You tell me what you mean by that.
Well, what I mean by that is I'm worried about what Ward's going to look like because of the inactivity in the in the ring. Well, he hasn't been in the ring since June. I know he's been in training and whatnot, but and remember he was training for a fight on the undercard of Cotto and Canelo, and he pulled out because of knee issues.
Yeah.
So being in the gym and working out and training is one thing, but being under the lights is different. That's what I'm talking about.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you to a point. I mean, but because this guy has been in big fights, he's been in the biggest fights, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The thing I worry about is he, you know, a court low? I mean, is this the time? I mean, because he's getting, you know, he's been through a lot of fights, you know. He's been through, you know, a lot of fights, a lot of names. He's never really gotten the recognition I feel that he's deserved anyway. I think you're looking at one of the best pound-for-pound fighters. But is he, you know, is he passing his prime along? Where was his best prime back at 168? You know, were those his best fights? Were those behind him now?
Well, that's another reason why I'm worried about the inactivity. I understand he had promotional issues and you had to go to court over that to get out of a contract. But you basically had to wait for the guy that you were suing to die so you could get yourself out of a promotional contract. And then you make the brilliant decision of signing with a promotion company, but with Roc Nation. And we talked about how Roc Nation does her promotion last week. I mean, if you're Andre Ward, you need a big name behind you. And you, I don't think this was a smart business move going with an inexperienced promoter here. I think that's one another reason why he's been inactive. You know, I just don't like, I don't like what he's doing outside the ring, if that makes sense.
What was the terms of, do we know the terms of his contract on Andre Ward? I mean, as far as how many fights he signed for?
All I know is when he first signed with Roc Nation, he asked for 3 tune-up fights before he got a major fight. So this is fight number 2 of that, if we're to believe those terms. So, I suspect he's going to have a tune-up again this summer, like June or July, and then November you're going to see him on pay-per-view with Kovalev. You know, but beyond that, I don't know what kind of contract it is.
Do you think he takes a tune-up in June or July, or do you think he takes another Sullivan-Barrera type of fight?
If I'm Andre Ward, I take another Sullivan-Barrera type fight because I want to sharpen my skills.
Right.
You know, I want difficult competition. I want to be able to raise the level of my game to prepare myself for the Crusher. Because Sergey Kovalev, as you know, is no joke.
No.
You know, and Kovalev doesn't know how to say no to a fight, so, you know.
Right, exactly.
You know, and let's face it, if you want the Kovalev fight on pay-per-view, which it's going to be, you know, in order to promote the fight, because neither one of these guys are talkers. One, he only talks to the media when he has to, and number two, the other guy doesn't speak, you know, very good English. So in order to promote this fight and build it up, you know, when you're in the ring, you actually want to look impressive to encourage people to spend their money.
Yeah, that's the tough thing I will say about Andre Ward, and I'll say the same thing about Regan Doe, is that, you know, while they're, you know, they could be qualified as some of the best fighters in the world, which they are the best fighters in the world, some could say top pound for pound, one and two, whatever the case may be, they're not very appealing market-wise. You know, I mean, as far as marketability and everything like that, I want to watch Andre Ward, or I want to watch Regan Dow because, you know, I'm a fan of the style. I'm a fan of you know, the boxing and their not, you know, their knowledge. When you see them fight, you know they know a lot about it. You
right.
know, as an average casual guy, they're not going to want to watch these guys.
No, I mean, that's why do you think Regan Dow got such a backlash when he was on the undercard of a Triple G fight? You cannot put... No offense to people, but you can't put a guy like Regan Dow on a Golovkin undercard because the audience that shows up for a Triple G fight are not going to be interested in seeing a guy like Regan Dow. It just, you know, that's why people reacted so badly to that performance.
Right, and I mean, in Regan Dow's, you know, case, man. What more could he have done in that fight? I mean, he did everything possible. I mean, he did, you know, he didn't knock the guy out, but he completely shut him down, completely
yeah.
stifled his offense. The guy couldn't hit him. He hit the guy. He beat the guy up, never got hit in the process. It just wasn't a fan-friendly fight. You know?
That's the key phrase. Why do you think Tom Loeffler and K2 have teamed Golovkin up every time recently with Chocolatito? They're in the promotion business for a reason. They realize if you're going to be on a Golovkin undercard, you've got to be entertaining, and that's why Chocolatito is there.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing, man. I mean, it's and not that Ward isn't entertaining, and not that you know, Rigondeaux is entertaining, but you know, he's not entertaining to the masses. And Andre Ward, I mean, look at Floyd Mayweather's style. Floyd Mayweather's another one who, if he had the personality of Andre Ward, he would be, you know, he wouldn't be as marketable as he is for sure. Nobody would want to pay to see him get beat up. I mean, or to win the fight.
Let's put it this way. He wouldn't have the money that he's got today.
I mean, you have to do something to get people to notice you and watch you. And Andre Ward so far hasn't done that. I mean,
Andre Ward doesn't do that. Regan Diaz doesn't do that. Right. Andersol Lord doesn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know.
There's a lot of, and these guys are top class fighters, man. I mean, these are top class guys.
Yeah.
It's just, man, it's tough. It's a tough situation to be in, especially when, you know, you're a fan of these guys and you look at them and you're like, man, why doesn't this guy get more run? He should, you know.
When Andre Ward first started, I was totally in his corner, especially with what he did in the Super 6 and the way he dominated Carl Froch and he basically dominated the entire 168-pound division, and even made the light heavyweight champion at the time drop down to take the fight, and he totally destroyed him. I mean, how many people can do that? You make the light heavyweight champion actually leave his division to fight you, and then you totally destroy the guy. I mean, not very many people can do that. I mean, Andre Ward, he deserves to be on the pound-for-pound list. He's a very good fighter, but I'm just worried about his recent past and the way he's conducted business. As people know, fighters, in order to be effective, they've got to be active. I don't approve, basically, of fighters nowadays who only fight once or twice a year. That's boring to me. I like a guy like Golovkin who's willing to fight three or four times a year. The more active you are, the better your chances are of being a success in this sport. That's just my opinion.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I don't think there's anything more left to say than that, because I tell you, that's the thing, man. You just got to be active, got to get your face out there, got to be marketable. And so far, man, as much as I like Andre Ward, he hasn't done that. So.
No.
Let's move on to the other fight on here on Saturday at Sheffield, England. Now, I don't think this is going to be televised. You'll catch it on Box Nation, I'm sure. I don't think it's on Showtime or anything like that.
No, it's not. No.
So, yeah, you'll catch it on Box Nation or Twitter or YouTube or one of those things. Kell Brook versus Kevin Bisier, 12 rounds for Brook's IBF welterweight title. Also on the undercard, interestingly enough, Luke Campbell, British Olympian, versus Gary Sykes, 12 rounds for the vacant Commonwealth lightweight title. Wasn't Luke Campbell just knocked out recently?
Yes, he was.
And
wasn't this the undercard that Rigo was supposed to be on?
No, that was last week.
Okay, all right. Okay.
So what do you think about Kell Brook and Kevin Bisier?
Well, I think Kell will take care of business, and I think he'll knock him out within 5 rounds. I hope this sets up the all-British fight between Brook and Khan, because that's one fight I want Amir Khan to get, because I think those two deserve to fight one another, and I think that would be well worth the price of admission, and I know somebody would show that fight. Even though I'm going to be picking Canelo, I give Khan a decent shot in this fight, because Canelo is going to be facing a guy that has a lot of interesting skills that Canelo will have trouble with, but I think Canelo's size will win out in the end. But I've talked to a few people that are 100% behind Khan, and I can't wait until that fight gets closer, because I really want to get into a few debates with those people.
Yeah, I tell you, the funny part is I saw Khan just recently, I guess, for the photo shoot or whatever, and he's put on some weight, and I got to be honest, he doesn't look good. maybe because of the train, maybe he's, obviously when he gets the weigh-ins and stuff, he's going to look a lot different, but right now that weight is not serving him well, doesn't look good. And I would, I've kind of questioned that too for Khan. If I'm Khan, I want to come in lighter, because you're not going to knock out Canelo. You're not going to, your goal should not be to knock out Canelo. Your goal should be to take him to a decision and outbox him. That's the way you're going to win this fight.
Yeah, well, now, in a fight like this, he's supposed to come in at 155. If he comes in, say, at 150, would he get, would the commission punish him for not actually making weight, or how does that work?
No, nobody's going to punish him. They only punish you if you come in overweight.
Okay.
Yeah, you're not.
Then if I'm Khan, I come in at like 150 for that.
Yeah.
And make myself as light as possible, and let Canelo come in at 165 or whatever he does, because fight night Canelo's going to be over 170.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing you could do to stop that.
Yeah.
There's no weigh-in clause or anything like that. So
no.
I mean that's the deal.
So, if I'm Khan, I use my speed, my quickness to my advantage, so I don't come in too heavy.
Right.
Because otherwise you're going to set yourself up to be KO'd early.
Right. And now, back to the Kell Brook fight with Bisier. And I think Bisier is a mandatory,
if I'm not mistaken. Yes, he is.
He's a mandatory. Yes. When is Kell Brook going to fight somebody, man?
Well, that's
fun. I like Kell Brook. But he hasn't fought any name guy since he beat Sean Porter.
No, and that's why I'm abdicating, Eric, that he fights Khan next, regardless of whether Khan loses to Canelo.
What if Khan gets knocked out next? I mean, do you think that fight's still that? I mean, it's going to be marketable in England no matter what. I think Khan needs to come over here and fight somebody, or not Khan, but Brook.
Brook
needs to come over here and fight somebody.
Okay,
hostage over there, fight somebody.
Okay, Eric, who would you recommend that he step in the ring with? I mean, all the names I can think of are tied up, unless you want to put him in with Danny Garcia.
Yeah, put him in with Garcia. Put him in with the winner of Thurman and Porter. Put him in with the winner. I mean, he's got, there's a lot of options out there. The problem is they want to keep the title in England. And I don't blame them. But the thing is, look, unless you go with this guy to be a star, a superstar, You know, which I think that's what they're gunning for.
Yeah.
You know, then you need to start, put them against Errol Spence. Let Errol Spence take the title, you know? I mean.
Well, okay. But the only big name fighter that I can think of off the top of my head that does not have a fight coming up would be Danny Garcia.
Well, they all have fights coming up. I mean, Kell Brook's fighting this weekend, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and then you've got Thurman Porter in June. So,
yeah,
those fights are feasible. I mean, they can make those.
That's what I'm saying, Eric. Let Brook take care of his mandatory this weekend. And then in June, you bring Brook over here to have fight Garcia.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I think that's a good fight.
And I don't know if you could work it out, but maybe you put Brook and Garcia on the same card as you put Porter and Thurman, and that way you set it up for the two winners to face each other, like, you know, in the fall or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, but enough with the Bizier's, enough with, you know, the guys he's fighting, you know, because he's fighting nobody.
No, I agree. You know, if you're going to be a champion, step up your level of competition,
right.
You know. And, you know, people could say the same thing about Triple G, but the reason why I don't pick on Triple G for not having any competition is because middleweights have boldly come out and found ways to avoid him. So I can't criticize Triple G for taking a Dominic Wade. You know, in Golovkin's case, he's got to take whoever's got the guts to step in the ring with him.
Yeah.
I don't know unless you offer somebody $100 million or something on how you get a bigger name in the ring with him. You know, because they're all scared to death. I hate to put it like that because I know fighters aren't scared, but that's the way it looks in his case anyway.
Yeah, a lot of rumors swirling around Triple G, now that you mention him. A lot of rumors swirling around Triple G that Mayweather wants to come out of retirement to fight him. I don't know if that'll happen. These are just real loose rumors. So,
well, Eric, Floyd would dance around for 12 rounds. How would Triple G do anything with him? You know, I love Golovkin, but realistically, that would... You know, Floyd, he doesn't put a name in his mouth unless he can see a way to beat him.
Right.
You
absolutely.
Know.
Yeah, very interesting fight, man. Interesting fight if it happens.
Yeah. But, well, we'll see.
And also, too, in London, too, this weekend, Chris Eubank Jr., Nick Blackwell versus Chris Eubank Jr., 12 rounds for Blackwell's British middleweight title. And Huey Fury, Tyson Fury's brother, is actually on the undercard as well, fighting Nagy Aguilera, 12 rounds for heavyweights. Eubank should win this fight. Should win it pretty convincingly. Eubank Jr. really looks good lately, so we'll see where he goes from there.
And Eric will be tuning in just so he can see Eubank's dad in the corner with the tuxedo.
I've got a man crush on Chris Eubank Sr.
And that's correct.
I'm comfortable with that. I am fine with that. I have
no problems with that. All right.
Guy's always dressed to the nines, son. He's the only guy you'll see in the corner with a tuxedo on. A three-piece suit on. Guy's bleeding and everything like that. Doesn't care. Love it.
I bet the cleaner love him afterwards.
he probably doesn't wear the same suit twice, man. That guy is sharp.
All right.
So that's this weekend's action. Let's move along to our history lesson now.
I remember this.
This is a good one, man. It's been our Roy Jones podcast here, and no difference here. Montel Griffin versus Roy Jones Jr., their first fight, March 21st, 1997. This was Roy Jones' first loss, very questionable. This fight, I tell you what, man, Roy Jones, during this fight, it was one of those fights where Roy Jones was winning this fight, and that's what you kind of took out of it. He was winning this fight, but he was getting a lot of resistance from Montel Griffin. Griffin was not an easy out like Roy had been accustomed to in recent fights. This guy actually came to fight and had a good game plan and was really stifling Roy in a lot of ways. Roy actually had to come back to tie the fight, and actually he was leading in the ninth round when the fight was stopped or whatever, but he had to really fight to get there. I mean, he was – Montel Griffin, by far and away, did better against Roy Jones Jr. than anybody I've ever seen.
If I remember the fight correctly, don't you blame the referee in this case? Because didn't the referee screw up somehow? I know it's 19 years ago now, but something sticks out in my mind about the referee having something to do with why this fight got stopped. Am I wrong?
It was an odd one. In the ninth round, Jones landed a right-left combination, causing Griffin to slump forward and lay face first down on the canvas. Referee Tony Perez then proceeded to count Griffin out, and the fight was stopped at the 227 mark. Thinking he had picked up a knockout victory, Jones began to celebrate in his corner. But Perez then announced that he had disqualified Jones for an illegal low blow, giving Jones his first professional loss and making Griffin the new WBC light heavyweight champion.
That's what I thought. I'm glad my memory is still working properly.
Yeah, Jones explained after the match that he wasn't sure Griffin was down. He said, "I didn't have time to think and see whether he was down. I thought he was down. And he might come back at me. I wasn't looking at his knees. I was looking at his face." Jones put the blame squarely on referee Tony Perez, saying, "I didn't feel the ref tried to separate me at all." Perez reiterated that he began counting Griffin out because he should have been able to continue. He would have only taken one or two point deduction from Jones. However, when Griffin was unable to continue, Perez was left with no choice but to disqualify Jones for the foul. That makes absolutely no sense.
Man, that wasn't the fight I watched.
Yeah,
you know?
That makes absolutely no sense. You can't count a guy out and then disqualify the other guy. It doesn't work that way.
No, and that's why there was an immediate rematch. And
even before the rematch, Griffin initially talked about a unification match with then WBA and IBF light heavyweight champion Virgil Hill. But instead, he agreed on a rematch with Jones less than 5 months later after their first fight. The rematch lasted little over 2 minutes. And less than 20 seconds into the fight, Jones sent Griffin down, just reeling into the ropes with a left hook. It was one of his specialty jumping left hooks.
Yep.
You know, he does those leaping left hooks better than anybody. My goodness.
Yeah.
And that was an official knockdown. Following the knockdown, Jones stalked toward Griffin, constantly attacking him with power punches. Griffin attempted to keep Jones at bay with his jab. He was just unable to establish himself as he did in the previous fight. Then with around 42 seconds left in the round, Jones caught Griffin flush with another leaping left hook. And that was just his bread and butter in that fight, and put Griffin down on his back. Griffin attempted to get up, and I can still see Griffin's face right now. He attempted to get up, and he just couldn't. Just couldn't.
Yep.
2:31 of the first round, Jones was declared the winner by a knockout, once again becoming the WBC light heavyweight champion and kind of erasing all doubt that first fight had.
Yeah, and then, of course, later on, he did fight Virgil Hill, and
heard round the world, yeah, right?
Oh, yeah.
That liver shot, man, goodness. Yeah, I mean, he was so lightning quick that everybody was surprised that Montel Griffin was able to hang with him in that first fight. And mm-hmm. What a job Montel Griffin did with him in that first fight. I mean, he really, really did a great job with Jones, man.
This was back in the time that Roy was being avoided like Golovkin is today. There's so many parallels here because nobody wanted to fight Roy. Nobody wants to fight Triple G. It's like... every time Roy stepped in the ring, he looked more impressive, and built up such a resume. It was an absolute shock that somebody finally, okay, I'm going to step in the ring, and I'm going to fight you. And Roy, you better be prepared to fight. And for the first time in a very long time, Roy was basically challenged. And I remember that the referee had something to do with it. But, yeah, that was right, yeah, because, man... That was why there was an immediate rematch afterwards, because, you know, there was too many questions left unanswered. You're like,
anybody who saw that fight knows that really wasn't a loss for him. I mean, that was a bad squad. That was a bad call. You know, I mean, it goes on his record nonetheless, but that was a bad call.
What a way to lose your zero, though.
It's awful. Awful, you know.
Yeah.
But I tell you, man, he was just so lightning quick. That left hook, man, in that second fight, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I put him down. And, I mean, 20 seconds into the first round, he was stung. You know, I mean, so it was just, it was bad, man.
Yeah.
Montel Griffin, don't know what he did that first fight, but he just couldn't replicate it the second fight. Jones was all over him.
Yep. And Montel was never the same after that.
No, he sure wasn't. He was definitely not the same.
Nope.
And then Roy Jones, of course, went on to continue his superstardom run and everything like that.
Eventually won the heavyweight championship of the world. You know?
Look, man, the guy started at middleweight and then, dominated at middleweight, super middleweight, light heavyweight, and then became the heavyweight champion.
Yeah.
That's all-time pound-for-pound stuff right there, man.
That's right.
That's a big deal. So.
Yep. Okay.
All right, let's move on to our news and rumors. This is an interesting one here. This is a real interesting one. Gary Russell Jr., who is training for his upcoming defense against Patrick Hyland, failed to submit his weight to the WBC for his title fight on time. Fighters for the WBC are required to weigh in 30 days and 7 days prior to the fight to make sure they are close to fighting weight and
that
they're not
correct.
Cutting weight or anything dangerous. I think this is actually a really good thing. I don't really like the sanctioning bodies too much, but I think this is actually one of the good things that they do. As it turns out, he sent the weight in 2 days after the deadline and checked out okay. He was weighing in properly 2 days after the deadline. What do you do? Do you think something fishy is going on in camp? I mean, they don't just miss deadline. They know because they've been through this before. All right, they know what's going on in camp. I mean,
In this case, Eric, I believe somebody dropped the ball here. There's something going on because, look, Gary Russell's been in the fight game long enough. He knows what the rules are. So why, what's your excuse for submitting late? Your stuff late. And if I'm part of the WBC, I want to check things out and make sure that my champion is representing my organization properly here. You know,
I mean, clearly he was overweight. I mean, I think that's a pretty safe assumption.
Yeah.
I mean, that's as an outsider looking in, I'm not in his camp. I don't represent his camp, but
right.
Remember,
his last fight got canceled. So, he's been inactive for quite a while.
So, do you think this is this could hinder him at all during the fight?
Well, not
against... Are we too far out?
We might be too far out, and let's face it, Patrick Hyland is no threat.
Right. Yeah, he's not going to be a big threat against Gary Russell.
Whether Gary Russell comes in overweight or not, Patrick Hyland is no threat. I would be more concerned if he had a different type of opponent here, but considering who his opponent is, I'm not worried. I'd be worried if it was a Lomachenko, for example. I'd be worried if it was, Santa Cruz or, somebody of that ilk.
Right.
But Patrick Hyland is no threat.
I think that, and what is it, the WBC, I think it's 10% 30 days out and 5% 7 days out.
That is correct.
It's somewhere around there.
Yeah.
So he had two extra days to make weight. My question is, there's no fine or anything like that. I don't understand this. If you're going to have a deadline, why not stick to the deadline or have ramifications for the deadline?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. I think somebody should be... somebody should be investigating, and that there should be a fine or something issued here,
Right. I agree, but doesn't look that way. But hopefully the fight comes off as planned and nobody's overweight and everybody makes weight and gets money and all that other good stuff.
And everybody wants boxing to become a mainstream sport. When you see stuff like this, how can you make it a mainstream sport? Your job as a fighter is to train and fight. Why can't you stay in your weight class? I mean, do you have to blow up in between fights? There's so many fighters now that don't seem to take their conditioning seriously anymore. Is it just laziness in this country, or what the hell is it?
Yeah, I tell you, and I think again, man, it's hard. I think that once you're at the top and you get to the top and you've been there a little bit, I think most people have a tendency to become complacent, and they're not hungry anymore, and they're not they don't want for anything anymore, and they're not living in the same house they were before. They're in a bigger house or a big mansion.
Well, in this business, complacency will get you broke real fast.
Absolutely.
You won't be able to make the kind of money you're making when you're on top. So keep that in mind.
That's right. No, very short window for sure. Speaking of short windows, Mayweather Floyd Mayweather has a new girl, a new squeeze, if you will. She's 19-year-old British girl, Remarnie Ball, and she's been rumored to be dating Floyd Mayweather. 19 years old. He's close to 40. Robert, what are your thoughts on this? You have younger women throwing themselves at you constantly. I know you. You're a playboy. What are your thoughts on this?
Thank you. I wish I had all that success. But I can't really criticize this because when I was in my 40s, I did date somebody a lot younger. And it turned out to be one of the best relationships I ever had. So, you know, normally I would like to jump all over Floyd for a case like this, but I can't because I actually did it myself. So
Robert,
you know,
just said, welcome to the club, Floyd.
Yeah.
How awesome. Look at that. Look at Robert, yeah, man. Tearing it up. All right. Let's move on to UFC 196. Now, we usually don't talk about the UFC on the show, but this is very interesting to me. UFC 196, which was the Conor McGregor-Nate Diaz fight, not even a title fight, garnered 1.5, Robert, 1.5 million buys. 1.5 million pay-per-view buys. Let that sink in for a minute. Not even a title fight. You surprised by this?
No, because here's a few things that people need to realize. The UFC, and I'm not a UFC supporter, but I don't dislike them. But Dana White and the Fertitta brothers are doing a wonderful job, and here's why. Do you realize that the UFC makes all of their fights available to bars, nightclubs, restaurants who want to show them? Yeah, they charge extra money for it. But their prices aren't outrageous. This was actually covered last week on Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya's show, The Next Round. They had a conversation about this last week. See, whenever restaurants or establishments wants to show boxing events, the boxing people, you know, depending on how big your establishment is, they jack up their prices and they want to charge thousands and thousands of dollars for people to actually show their events in big establishments. The UFC doesn't do that. That's why the UFC is getting more popular and people are more interested in it, because if they don't want to pay for it at home, they can actually go to their local bar or whatever and actually watch the fights. Boxing does not do that. And that's why this fight did so well. Not only did people buy it at home, but people actually went to places to actually watch that. And you can't do that in boxing, for boxing things, because the promotion companies and the networks and people like that, they stick it to the business owner.
Do you think that Canelo Khan gets that many buys?
I think it could because of the interesting appeal, but again, for people that don't want to pay for it, they don't have any places to go unless you go to a friend's house or something. See, that's my point. With the UFC, you can go to other places and go to casinos. Like all the Indian casinos here in California, they all show the UFC fights. They can't afford to show the boxing pay-per-views.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, I mean, we're talking about home buys. I mean, clearly the bars are in there, but, I mean, you don't like, I mean, that's, if a bar buys it, that's one buy. That doesn't count as like 20. That's
okay.
Like one buy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, do you think that, like I said, I mean, 1.5 million to me is an outrageous number, especially for non-title fight for something like that.
And I think it does well for the UFC because it's probably the highest rated UFC pay-per-view that didn't involve a title in their history. I mean,
yeah.
I'm sure they've had title fights that have gotten more. Do you happen to have at your disposal what the biggest UFC pay-per-view has ever been?
100. It was UFC 100. I don't know how many buys that did, but it was 100, UFC
100. Okay. But, no, I think this speaks a lot to the combat sports fans, where they want to spend their money these days. And I think this should send a very strong message to boxing to figure out a way to make their product more viable for people to actually get, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And I mean, but I think that, I think it's definitely buyable. I mean, I don't know if you want to watch the fight. I mean, you clearly can.
Look, you and I are junkies. If it's worth watching, we're going to buy it. You know, we're either going to buy it or we're going to watch it on our computer. Like, let's take the Pacquiao Bradley fight, for example. Do I really want to buy that? Not really, but they do have an interesting undercard unless things have changed. So, you know, I'm going to buy it because, you know, I'm going to support those guys. I'm definitely going to buy the Canelo fight, because the Khan Canelo thing is interesting to me. Even though I don't think Khan's going to win, I applaud him for having the guts to actually step up and say, you know what, I want to take this. You know, we've criticized Khan in the past for begging for Pacquiao and Mayweather, but here he is willing to go out of his weight class and fight somebody twice his size. Granted, he's going to get paid for it, but there's not very many 147-pound fighters that are going to be willing to step up and fight Canelo, you know, because, you know, they want to stay at their weight class. I mean, Khan, I applaud him for actually having the guts to do this.
I think it's great that Khan does this, and, you know, and I don't think it's a bad fight. I mean, you know, he's coming up, and it's one of those fights that, you know, you don't quite know. I mean, it could go south. It could go south real quick for Khan, but the fact that he's jumped up, I mean, he's a name opponent, definitely a quality opponent. Both Pacquiao and Mayweather ducked him. So, you know, hey, I mean, you know, all the spoilers are coming, man, for sure. If
looking at this realistically, the one that's gambling here could possibly be Canelo. I mean, just think about this for a minute. Not that it's going to happen, but what would happen if Khan stepped into that ring on May 7th and actually beat Canelo? I mean, that would send shockwaves throughout the boxing world. I mean, it would turn the boxing world upside down.
Yeah, Canelo, and, you know, he's right. I mean, the thing is that Khan, if he moves and fights like he could, you know, like he used to, it could be a long night for Canelo, man, because he has trouble with boxes. He had trouble with Lara. He had trouble with Cotto.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a long night for him. My brain, however, is telling me I saw this Khan fight against Chris Algieri, and I don't care what anybody says about Chris Algieri. Chris Algieri is not on the level.
No.
I mean, he's gonna and you're going to see that in the Errol Spence fight. Errol Spence is going to dismantle this guy.
Yeah.
All right. Algieri's not on the level.
No, but I think when it comes to pay-per-view buys, I think the Canelo fight does better than the Bradley Pacquiao, because I think people who really follow boxing and know what and have really paid attention to it are going to be really interested to see you know, what Amir Khan does to Canelo.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, man. I still don't think either one of those fights hits 1.5 million buys.
No, I don't.
I don't even think it comes.
You know, I think Khan Canelo will do close to a million, but I don't think they do 1.5.
I agree with you. I think it'll do close to a million. I think the Khan Canelo fight will do close to a million. I don't think it hits a million, though.
I would say anywhere between 700 and 800,000 buys for that fight.
What do you think the Pacquiao fight? How many buys?
I think that one's going to tank, unfortunately. You'll be lucky if that gets a half a million.
I think it does like 300,000, 350, 300, right in there.
Well, yeah. I'm saying a half a million because I take Pacquiao at his word that he's not going to fight anymore. I think the two Pacquiao fans, the ones that have been behind him throughout his career, I think they're going to pony up for one last time. So, you know.
Could be.
And I know it's impossible to take fighters at the word, but I want to see Freddie Roach and Bob Arum eat their words, because those two are convinced Manny's going to continue to fight. I don't think he is. I think this will be the last time we see Pacquiao.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he has left, too. I think that's the other thing, is to see what he has left. Bradley, who's you know, being trained by Teddy Atlas now and stuff like that. I love Teddy Atlas. I love what he does with fighters, and he has a way of making them better. I really believe that. But as far as what Pacquiao has left, I don't know that it's much. I don't know. He didn't show us much in that Mayweather fight. What did he land 80-some punches?
Yeah, it wasn't good.
He said he has
good.
A broken arm. He said he had a broken shoulder, which he did. Yeah. I mean, which he did, but it wasn't good, man. It was not a good showing for him. So,
but I think Bradley will you know, he doesn't do what Mayweather does, so I think we'll find out what Pacquiao has left. And, you know, like I said, it's not a good idea to believe fighters these days, but I actually believe Manny. I think this will be it.
I don't know how he can fight and be in Congress or whatever he's running for over there in the Philippines.
Right,
you know,
it's
so.
The Senate, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how he can do both.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a tough gig, man.
But Arum, Bob Arum and Freddie Roach are going, oh, no, this is not going to be it. I want to see them eat their words. And I want to see what Top Rank does for Plan B when they realize their big A-side is no longer going to fight.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of retirement, man, Marcos Maidana, there's been pictures surfacing of him on the Internet, and he looks close to 200 pounds or something like that. He's a big boy now. Put on a lot of weight and stuff like that, and he came out and addressed it on his Instagram. It says, you know, he's basically he's kind of enjoying life now, you know. So it sounds like he's retired. So
well, look, Maidana had two. He had one very good fight with Mayweather, one fight that wasn't so good, and with those two paydays alone, he can retire for the rest of his line and rest of his life. And Marcos Maidana had a good career.
Yeah,
let him enjoy life, you know.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. Now let's move on to our train wreck of the week. Robert's favorite segment here. Train wreck of the week, Ohio's own Kelly Pavlik, Youngstown's own.
Are you still proud to be from Ohio?
Absolutely.
Okay.
He's one of us. The former middleweight champion, Kelly Pavlik, has been indicted on felony charges in Ohio after being accused of shooting a man with a pellet gun. Yeah, right?
Okay.
A Mahoning County grand jury indicted the 33-year-old Pavlik on two counts of felonious assault for an incident last August at his home in Canfield. The Vindicator newspaper in Youngstown reported that the man was helping dig a lake on Pavlik's property and told the police he was shot in the head and the arm while testing the lake's depth.
Here's what it says, a couple of things. The shocking thing that Kelly Pavlik is only 33 years old, and he's basically done with boxing.
Yeah, right.
I mean, and to stoop to this kind of level. I mean, I know Pavlik had drug and alcohol issues, you know, and that's what cost him to leave the sport. But when you think to this level to shoot somebody, you know, what can I say?
I mean, in his defense, it was with a pellet gun. It wasn't like it was a 9mm or something. I mean, we do that all the time in Ohio. That's what we do.
Okay.
You know, we hit people with pellet guns. It's not a big deal. You baby, you can't take a pellet gun.
All right.
You know, come on.
All right.
Safe little pellet gun.
Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, 33, man. Yeah, he's done. And, yeah, he has definitely had his run-ins with drugs and alcohol and everything like that. I don't know if this was a drug-related incident or an alcohol-related incident.
It very well could have been.
Yeah, I mean, from the outside looking in, yeah, it kind of sounds like that. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know about you, but I just don't go around shooting people with pellet guns, even though I live in Ohio.
No.
Yeah, it's just not something we do around here. But, you know, maybe in Youngstown it's a little bit different. I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, so that's our train wreck of the week.
Okay.
All right. Also, too, Jermall Charlo, the IBF 154-pound champion, will defend his title against Austin Trout. A time and date is still being worked on for this fight, but the fight was rumored for the Berto Ortiz 2 undercard, but that's not been set yet. So,
well, you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb here. I give Austin Trout a real good shot here.
I do, too.
Because, look, I love the Charlo brothers. I think they're good. They're very good fighters. You know, wonderful story, good trainer. But neither one of them have really been tested in the boxing ring yet.
No.
And you're dealing with a guy who's been a former champion. It would not shock me if, no doubt, Trout steps in the ring and gets his belt around his waist again. And then Julian Williams will finally get his Trout fight.
Trout's a good fighter, man. Trout's a great boxer, man. That's not an easy out for Charlo, that's for sure.
I've had the opportunity to interview Austin Trout on a couple of different occasions, and he's a classy guy, man. And hey, I would love to see him have a belt around his waist. So if that fight comes off, I expect Austin to step in and take that belt.
Yeah, I think so too. It's going to be, like I said, man, it's going to be a good fight, man. Speaking of another good fight that may or may not come off now, Nicholas Walters, the Axeman versus Vasyl Lomachenko, was set to be pretty much all but finalized, man, but I'm hearing that's not the case now. You know, Lomachenko would move up one division. June 11th on HBO, it's scheduled to go down the theater at Madison Square Garden in New York. But Aaron,
no, actually, it's going to be the big room, the main room.
Isn't that the theater?
No, the theater's the smaller one.
I've got the theater here. I don't know, but maybe so. Maybe you're right. We'll go with give you the benefit of the doubt. Aram said it's been slow going. He said he's really far apart on the money with Nicholas Walters. Now, I've heard that Nicholas Walters came back. They agreed on a price, and Nicholas Walters came back and almost doubled that price. This is from Dan Raphael. And I saw the numbers. I just don't have them in front of me, but it was a pretty significant jump.
Hey, Bob, all you have to do is pull what Don King used to do. Show up at the guy's house with a briefcase, hand him a briefcase, make it look like there's more money in the briefcase than what there actually is, and he'll sign the contract, and
you go.
And how many times did Don King pull that off? He did that more than once, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, especially when he was getting sued. He was getting sued for, like, millions. He'd show up with, like, a briefcase full of money, like 50 grand, you know, at a dude's house, and the guy would just sign the contract, drop the lawsuit, and take the 50,000.
So there you go. That's all you got to do, Bob. Just show up at the guy's house, pull a Don King, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, this one, man, let me tell you what, man. This, to me, Nicholas Walters, he did not look good in his last fight at all.
No,
and
he didn't.
And for him to be sitting here demanding more money to fight Lomachenko, Lomachenko's coming up to fight him because Walters can't go down in weight. Now he wants more money to fight him. Dude. Come on, man. Either you want to fight the guy or you don't want to fight the guy. I mean, you get a lot of money.
I want to see this fight come off because I want to find out. I hate to say this, but I want to find out how good Lomachenko really is. I mean, his competition lately, you know, it's been undesirable. I want to see this fight come off.
Yeah, I would too. I'm not real confident that Walters can do anything with him, but I definitely want to see it, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
And also on that card as well, Felix Verdejo will also be ticketed as the co-main event for that fight.
That's what I was talking about earlier. Yeah. Because the rumored name is going to be Juan Diaz now that he won this weekend.
Yeah. So. Good luck, Juan. You know,
remember that is the actual Puerto Rican weekend.
Right.
That's what Puerto Rico does with their news with their superstars because the Cotto fight that's supposed to be happening is a week later at Barclays. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So let's move on here. Your boy Manny Pacquiao has been banned again. from the Grove, a popular attraction in L.A. It's kind of like, from what I understand, it's like a mall. They have shops there, restaurants.
That is correct,
They've banned Manny Pacquiao again. These are the statements of hatred, Grove owner Rick Caruso told TMZ. A lot of people from the gay community come to the Grove, and they have the right to not feel uncomfortable. Manny Pacquiao is no longer welcome. This is the second time Manny Pacquiao has been banned from the Grove. In 2012... he was also barred from the shopping center for quoting a Leviticus passage that says homosexuals should be put to death. What is wrong with that guy?
look, I applaud your religious views, but come on, you've got to be politically correct, and I'm going to be very interesting to see the results come May 9th in his election to see if he actually does win.
I think that's the real fight right there, you know.
Yeah.
But they said, you know, they're saying that it really hasn't affected his campaign all that much. It hasn't affected his numbers, you know.
That blows me away. I'm not Filipino, but does that mean all Filipinos feel the way he does? You know?
I would doubt it. I would hope not. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's crazy. Yeah, quoting the Leviticus passage says homosexuals should be put to death. What is wrong with this guy, man?
Oh my!
Everybody, well, I love when they start quoting from the Bible because the passage they got that from, you know, isn't it like if you wear something with two different kinds of cloth, you should be put to death? Divorce, you know, you should be put to death.
Yeah,
Everybody forgets that one. Everybody forgets that one. Everybody remembers this one, but the divorce and everything that's so against the churches and everything, everybody forgets to mention that one. Nobody wants to talk about that one, you know.
Right.
And all these old rules that they have in the Old Testament that they're getting this from, it's like, come on, man. But, so no more Cheesecake Factory for Pacquiao, I guess. Unbelievable. So, This is going to interest my man Robert here. Billy Joe Saunders, all right? Saunders was recently quoted as saying, at the end of the day, everyone knows that I'm chasing a big fight with Golovkin. That's a big money fight, and I want to test myself against the very best to see how good I am.
But he offered you $4 million and you turned it down.
I thought it was close. Yeah, was it $4 million? I don't know if it was $4 million or close to $5 million. I thought it was like right around $4 or $5 million for the fight. He wanted six. He said, if I can get $6 million, then I'll fight anybody. They practically gave it to you, man. I mean, they gave you a good chunk of money, a lot better than what you're gonna get in your next fight. I guarantee that. How can you say he's chasing Golovkin when they offered him the fight? He said he wants a big money fight. Yeah, well, you had it, you goof. And God help you if you lose a fight, because now that's out the window.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it hurts you. I really don't think it hurts you, Saunders. It definitely would not have hurt him to lose to Golovkin. You know?
Because Golovkin has reached a level in his career that if you lose to him, it's not an embarrassment anymore. You know?
Right. It's not. There's no shame in it, you know.
Yeah.
There's no shame in it at all. So,
Billy, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. They offered you $4 million and you turned it down. Give me a break. See, even my phone doesn't agree with you.
What are you doing over there, you know? Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, man. It's like, I mean, that's just delusional right there. That's just delusional talk.
Give me a break.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, he had to go hang out at the Grove or something like that. I don't know. Or hang out with Pacquiao. Oh, hang out with Pacquiao. I'm trying to get into the Grove.
good luck with that.
Yeah, wasn't Billy Joe Saunders is also the one that said women belong in the kitchen and stuff?
Yes. Yeah.
Him and Pacquiao need to hang out. You know what I'm saying?
Boy, with these people putting down women, because yesterday we had a controversy with the head of the Indian Wells tennis tournament. He basically said, women should be proud to be here because the men do all, the men are the one that make all the money, and that really stirred up a controversy in L.A. yesterday, you know.
What's going on with people, man? What is up with that?
You know.
This whole time thinking, man.
Yeah.
Delusional, man. They're just delusional, Robert.
Those days are over with, buddy. I mean,
yeah, Robert. You can't think like that anymore. That's what I try to tell. That's what I try to tell ringside Robert, man. You can't.
Yeah, I never thought that way, and you know, so give me a break.
All right, on that note, that'll do it for this edition of Ringside Reporter. As always, you can catch Robert on Twitter at Ringside Robert, or you can call Ringside Robbie's Corner at 773-572-7781 and listen to all the podcasts and history lessons. I'm at Ringside 73, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Ringside Reporter podcast. Check us out on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com, on Twitter at Ringside73, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Ringside73. Subscribe to us on iTunes.